You are now tuned in from the Desk of Low, brought to you by from the That Feeling Podcast Network. If you have a dream, go get it. Welcome back from the Desk of Low. I have with me somebody from Detroit. Now, he incorporates anime in his music too, so that's why I really fuck with him too, because I'm a big anime head too. He also likes video games too, so without further introduction. Oh, and he's a member of Clear Soul Forces, so if you already know who that is, Abnovel is on the phone.
You.
So, how are you doing today, sir?
What's going on, man? I'm good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. So one of the things I always wanted to tell you too, a lot of people may find you through Clear Soul Forces too. My man Vish actually put me on to you. The first project I ever bumped from you was Dilla Instinct. I love how you incorporated Jay Dilla with Killer Instinct, sir.
Oh wow, yeah, thank you, man. You talking about Kid Vicious?
Yes, sir.
Oh man, that's the homie, man. That's dope, man.
I was curious, was Novelist always your first name? I mean, like, with stage name when you were first getting into rap, sir?
No, I was, when I first started with Clear Soul, I was going by J-Rock. And then, I changed it to Novelist. J-Rock, it was never really like an artist name, it was just kind of a nickname I had, you know, growing up. I've been playing basketball my whole life, so that was just kind of like my nickname that like all my teammates and coaches called me, and I felt like I needed a name that fit me as an artist, so then I came up with Novelist, which is, interestingly enough, is a combination of my kids' names. My son's name is Jaylis, and my daughter's name is Nova, so I just kind of put them together, and that's how I got Novelist.
Oh, I like that, too. I like that. That's why when rappers do interviews too, because it gives you more of appreciation behind names too, because most people will be like, oh, he must write books too, but I understand you do that too. Have you finished writing your manga book you've been working on, I read about, sir?
I'm still working on it, man. I have a lot of chapters written, just working on getting it, you know, fully illustrated, man, and published. Hopefully this time next year, I'll have some copies that I can, you know, that I can distribute.
Do you remember the first time ever picking up manga, like a Shonen Jump, and you're reading it backwards, and you have to get used to it? It's like, what is this?
Oh, yeah, I do, man, I do. I think the first manga book I ever read was Naruto, and I read Naruto years and years ago, but now it's like, it's funny because I read manga so much that when I go back and read, you know, like some Marvel comics, I'm so used to reading it the other way that it's like almost harder for me to read a regular traditional comic book now, you know, because I always catch myself reading it the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's kind of hard too when you get so invested into manga too, because you got to read it backwards most of the time, and you go back to like something like a Marvel when they put out and you have to read a traditional. It's like, oh, wow, we're reading it the wrong way.
Yeah, I do it all the time.
So with yours, are you doing it backwards or frontwards? So I was curious.
Mine is going to be like traditional, like backwards.
Okay, so you're keeping it true to manga.
Yeah.
Can you remember, like, the very first time that you ever got into manga, sir? Because I understand Samurai Champloo was the first anime you ever saw.
No, the first anime I ever saw was probably Ninja Scroll.
Oh, well, wow, that was pretty graphic as hell to see for your first anime.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm saying. That's a super graphic, you know, weird movie, but that was the first anime I saw. Then obviously, like, I, you know, I was watching Dragon Ball when I was really little. Samurai Champloo is my favorite and definitely probably most influential anime on me. I watched that. I remember watching that in high school and just, you know, just seeing, like, the way that they were able to blend hip-hop and anime together. It really had a big impact on me, so definitely my favorite.
Would you say when you were seeing Ninja Scroll 2 that you were never suspected that from like a cartoon in that form too? Because like I was watching that the other day and I was like telling somebody, I was like, man, this is so graphic. We were watching this as kids.
Yeah, Ninja Scroll is incredibly graphic, but just seeing it though, it kind of, I was really young when I watched it, unfortunately, but seeing it, that it definitely made me want to find more things like that. Not even necessarily violence, but just like the whole ninjas and the samurai, like more cartoons that looked like that and were made like that. You know what I'm saying? And then that's when I came on Dragon Ball, and I was obsessed with Dragon Ball, and then after that, I just started watching all types of anime.
I ain't gonna front, my first anime was Pokemon, and then from there on out, I was like, what's this style, man? I'll
Yeah,
keep it
man,
all the way a buck.
Pokemon's a classic though. I was obsessed with Pokemon when I was in about fourth, fifth grade. I was bringing the Game Boy to school every day. I actually just saw Detective Pikachu the other day.
Oh, did you like it, or did you think they should have just
I
kept
did,
it?
man. I wanted. I wish there was more. I wish there was more action in it. But from my understanding is that they based it off of the actual Detective Pikachu game, and there's not any fights in that game. So
Oh, I
it's like a
don't.
noir. It's like a noir game. Man. You know
Okay.
what I mean? So it's, but I thought the movie was good. Definitely have some really impressive CGI in it, and it really, really made me want to live in a Pokemon world. I would totally live in a Pokemon world.
Yeah, because from you seeing them animated to like them actually in real life, it's like, yo, like it actually looks like.
Crazy. Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
When I was going through my old notes too, I remember during around Christmas time, you posted something like some of your old gifts that you got, like the Zelda Oracle of Ages, and
Oh yeah.
I was gonna ask you too, for the people, for the kids who are listening too, we had to play Game Boys with no backlight too. That shit was hell.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. I don't think they had a. I don't think there was a backlit Game Boy until Game Boy Advance, and I
Yeah,
want to say it was.
it was the
I don't
SP
even know if
one,
it
the
was
one
the
that
regular
folds.
Game Boy Advance. It might have been the SP one,
Yeah, I don't think Advance
but
even had
definitely
that.
like. Yeah, we had to play, we had to play Game Boys with no backlight. So I do remember there was a time when I do remember there was a time when the Game Boy Color came out with some little lights that you could plug it
Oh,
into
those
the side
worm
and make
lights.
it
Yeah, I
look
remember
like.
those.
Yeah, little like reading lights. Those were kind of effective, but not really. Just the screen was so dark, and I actually still have my Game Boy Color, so I cut it on like about a year ago, and I was just looking at it like, oh my goodness, this is really what we play games on. You can't even see the screen unless you hold it to a certain angle and get some light, refracting off of it. It's like, I can't believe that was the standard back then.
Yeah, like that was the highest standard too, because everybody had that.
Oh yeah.
When you were first getting into hip hop too, who were the first earliest hip hop that you can remember hearing at a young age?
Oh man. So when I was pretty young, my cousin Jason used to babysit myself and my brother, and I can remember my first exposure to like real, like real hip hop was definitely during that time. I do remember, I tell this story a lot too. He had a lot of tapes, man, and this was obviously, back when cats had the cassette tapes, and he had, I remember he would just always play, he listened to a lot of Nas, he listened to a lot of Biggie, Redman, you know what I'm saying? And I remember taking his Nas, It Was Written tape, and I took it. So It Was Written is actually the first rap album that I've ever listened to, like, all the way through. Okay. And it was taken from him, you know. So definitely that was my earliest, like, exposure to rap music.
You know, I like how you said that, too, that It Was Written was, like, the first rap album you actually listened to in entirety, too, because, like, years and years later, you actually flipped I Gave You Power with the Infinity Stones, too. That's what I was like, yo, I was like, yo, that shit is sick.
Yeah, man, and I love that song, I love that album, so just, I like being able to, you know, kind of just my way of
paying homage.
Paying homage a little bit to people that I looked up to when I was growing up. And, you know, you don't necessarily got to drop their name, you know, for it to be a tribute. You know, if people who know, you know, if you know, you know.
Yeah, for the truth, like for the people who actually listen to the music and not just skim through it.
Right, exactly.
I was curious, too, because you list MF Doom as one of your influence too. I was curious the first time that you ever heard Operation Doomsday.
Oh man, yeah, I love Doom, man. Doom is probably my favorite rapper other than like Black Thought, Nas, Redman, M. Doom is right there, man. The first Doom album I actually heard was not Operation Doomsday. It was Food. But the first time I did hear Operation Doomsday, which was, I went back and, you know, listened to it right after I heard that. And it was, man, I thought it was amazing. That album really made me a fan of Doom's production, you know, not just his lines, but his production. He's one of my favorite producers ever as well. And then on top of that, man, I just thought it's probably Operation Doomsday might be my favorite album cover, like ever.
And, he does have some pretty like interesting album covers. Doom, do you like how he keeps that mysteriously persona? Because like right now, because like it's crazy how much people like look up to him from like back then until now, because he's kind of looked at as a myth because he pops up here and there.
Right. Yeah. I like it, man. I think it's dope that he. You know, I'm a big. I love pro wrestling. Like I'm a huge pro wrestling fan, and just what Doom does, it reminds me of. Like a villain in pro wrestling, like he is just able to like stick to this character and not ever break it. And I think that's amazing. It takes a lot of character and like discipline to be able to just stick to something like that. And it just he's just like become that person in real life.
Yeah, because, like, it takes a lot of thought, too, to do what he does, too. Like, with the mask and how he went and did that album without the mask, too. Like, it's just, like, people actually have to listen to lyrics to, like, get, like, yo, there's a lot of thought that goes into this.
Oh, yeah.
With that being said, too, when you were coming up, too, I understand that high school was, like, really, really crazy for you, too, because you were in basketball, Clearasaur Forces, too. I understand that you met the Clearasaur Forces. You guys were recording a song together, and you guys ran into Royce 5'9", and you guys rhymed for him all night, and he actually talked y'all into being a group. Is that true?
It is, man. This was actually college, not high school. I was playing ball in college, doing Clearasaur Forces thing, so my life at that time was really kind of crazy because I was just constantly traveling. Like there were times when I would be out of state for a basketball game, and then the bus would pull up, and I'd have to like literally, you know, link up with my group and get on a plane and miss more school and go do some shows and then come back. So it was a lot, but yeah, man, we were at this studio one night, this was before we were a group, we were young, man, and we were just kind of messing around, recording some music, and Royce was in there. At the time, he was working on Street Hop, the album.
Oh, wow.
Street Hop. Yeah, and he, you know, we ran into him, we hung out with him, and we were all just, you know, kicking rhymes all night, And he kind of put it in our ear that we should be a group. And that suggestion actually made us become a group. That's honestly how, you know, Clear Soul Forces was born. And Royce is he's a good friend of mine now, still. And it's just crazy that, you know, that happened. And our relationship is still intact.
When you guys were coming up with two of the name Clear Soul Forces too, I'm curious on who actually came up with that name, or did you guys all come to a conclusion like this was going to be the name?
Elijah Day is actually the one that came up with that name. He came up with it. I can't really tell you. That's like kind of a story that he tells all the time. I don't really remember all the details that went into it, but. He's definitely the one that came up with it, and I was just
kind of,
and you know, we all just agreed on it.
All right, I would definitely reach out to him and try to get that too, because you guys have like you guys bring like the essence of like Detroit hip hop when I was first discovering like a slum village or like Jay Dilla sound. But like when I'm listening to like certain projects by you, like Cerebral Apex too, it kind of gives me like a Final Fantasy VII vibe too. I'm curious if you ever played that game.
I did. I think everybody's played that game. I did. I did play that game, and that's a pretty, you know, it's an honorable comparison there. So that's dope to hear you say that.
Because, like, you know, certain points in that game, too, you hear, like, certain background music of it, too. And, like, when I listen to that Cerebral Apex, it just reminds me of that game. I don't know what it is, though. Maybe it's because, like, you actually have, like, history with, like, knowing gaming, too. So I was curious, like, did you always have to, like, play around with that name, Cerebral Apex? And can you give the meaning of that title, sir?
Cerebral Apex is, so in the manga that I'm writing, you know, it's the name of, that's the name that they give the power that these people have. It's like it's a mind power, and it's called, Cerebral Apex. It's actually crazy, because I honestly came up with, I started writing this manga before I made the album, and then once I got so far in the manga, I was like, I totally have to do an album, you know, kind of based off of this, and then that's how that happened. And I just came up with the title. It was pretty quick.
Okay. I noticed there's two different covers of that too. One's on your Bandcamp and one's for the digital service too. What inspired that too? How come you didn't want to keep the same album artwork when you put it on digital platforms as opposed to your Bandcamp one?
I'm all sold out of the physical CDs, but when I did the CDs, it was like it was an 8-panel, you know, fold out, had manga panels on the inside, and it had both the covers in it. I'm just a big fan, you know. I grew up on comic book, you know, culture and manga culture and all that. So I'm just a fan of you know, just how comic books come out, and it's kind of, if you miss that first run, you know, that's kind of your only shot to get it, you know. And then once it comes out again, it's got a different cover, you know. I'm always a fan of, like, variant editions and things like that. So that was just me being a, you know, a comic book head and just trying to emulate some things that they do in that industry.
Oh, I like how you said that, too. That gives more of an explanation, too, because, like, I like how you said when you're, like, trying to get, like, a first edition of something, like, it may be sold out, and then, like, 2 years later, it is the reissue, too, like, with certain vinyl, let's say.
So I'm gonna do some more physical copies and vinyl sooner or later. I'm working on getting vinyl as well, and, you know, I plan on doing the same thing. It'll be a different packaging, it'll be a different cover than the last one, so.
I heard in a past interview, too, one of the goals was to quit your job, and then, like, that interview was in 2016, and then when you released that album, a couple months later, you quit your job. That was actually an inspiring story to hear, because you put that into the universe, and it happened, too. Would you say that that album really, like, was the one that actually took off for you?
Cerebral Apex, man, it will always have a special place in my heart. Just because when I you know, was working on the album, I was going through a lot, you know, just being really stressed out at work and just spending so much time there, and it was just, I was just kind of at a time in my life where I was like, it's literally, you know, now or never, like can't keep waiting. So I felt like, you know, my album was doing well. I was, you know, a lot of people were buying it. I was selling crap out of the physical copies, and I was just like, if you're not gonna quit your job now, you're never gonna quit. You know, that's how I felt. So I just did it. I just had to do it, and you know, I've been blessed so far. Even I haven't had to get another job yet. So it was definitely an album that changed my life.
Yeah, and then also to your 5 a.m., and I may say the name wrong, too. I say a lot of things wrong. 5 a.m. in
Shibuya,
too. That track was very powerful, too, because, like, you talk about what you were going through, too, about that time. I was curious, like, what made you want to incorporate that a song like that? Like, what made you want to write? Did you just have to get it out, or you felt like somebody else could relate to that?
I wrote that song. I actually did write the song, and I was in Japan with another artist and a friend of mine, Mega Ran. We were in Japan. We were doing some shows out there, and we actually went to Wrestle Kingdom, to Tokyo Dome. And one night after our show, we were just riding back on the train, man, and I just wrote that song on the train, you know. And I feel like one thing that I love is when people, you know, write me messages or send me emails and they tell me how much they can relate to my music, and I kind of, that also, it keeps me, you know, it keeps me motivated, it keeps me going, it just lets me, it makes me feel good to know that I'm not the only person that is, you know, going through these things and experiencing these things, and just being, knowing that, because I'm not the most social person. You know, I'm very super shy, introverted type of person. So just knowing that my music resonates with other people and that they can relate to it, that's kind of my way of communicating with the world, because I'm not the most, like, talkative person. You know, so that makes me feel good about myself.
Would you say, like, you let the music talk for itself?
I said it makes me feel good about myself. Okay. You know, and then, like, yeah, but, you know, that could also be said, you know, I just kind of let my music speak for me, because I don't speak very often.
Yeah. Would you say, when you first heard a note, because you said you were introverted, too, did you after, like, when you first heard yourself, like, on a record, too, you're like, damn, that's what I sound like? He's like, yo, I like the way you sound.
Yeah, you know, and it's weird, man, because, you know, people have watched me perform, you know, we just did a tour, and everybody's just like, here, you're so, like, you're such a different person on stage, and I am, and I just think that's just because it's, you know, the one place in my life where I feel comfortable, you know, like I belong there, and that it's kind of my world there, so I feel, you know, a lot. I actually feel comfortable there, whereas some people might feel nervous. I actually feel super at home in that element.
Because it's like, it brings out a different energy in you, would you say?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. I see that Clear Soul Forces was on Beats One Radio with Ebro. What was that feeling like for you?
Oh, it was cool, man. It was cool, man, and it was just it was really dope to see him. He kind of played the song and then he kind of ran it back, you know. And it's always kind of a nice little stamp of approval when DJ runs back the record, you know, like, hold on. You know, he ran it back and he's like, oh, y'all, you know, you guys are rapping, you know. So it was dope, man. We were sitting down playing it, listening together. So it was a nice feeling.
Okay. Yeah, because I understand too, you're very big on wrestling too. A lot of people may hit you up on wrestling questions too. I'll keep it all the way buck. I ain't into wrestling, but I was curious on if for the people who ain't into wrestling too, if you can give a little bit of insight of New Japan.
I mean, I've been watching wrestling my whole life. I love it. My son, you know, it just me having a son, it really got me like super back into it. My son's, you know, he's obsessed with wrestling right now, so we watch it a lot together. New Japan, I love New Japan. I've always been a big fan of Japanese wrestling, and it's just, you know, if you're looking for, you know, WWE is kind of the, you know, it's still, there's still some very, very good wrestlers in WWE, but it's definitely more of the mainstream, like, sports entertainment kind of product, whereas New Japan is more so like the, it's more of a sport, it's more of a, it's like it's pro wrestling as opposed to sports entertainment, you know, like New Japan is, you're gonna get more so just really good. Really good wrestlers and really, really talented athletes in the ring, and then you know, turn up that you're gonna get that, but you're also gonna get some, you know, some cheesy, dramatic storylines and some over the top, you know, characters as well. So that's kind of the difference between the two.
Yeah, I understand too. Like, your son's into wrestling, as you said too. Did you ever hook up the N64 and show him some of the old N64 wrestling games?
Oh man, you know, it's so crazy that you say that. So crazy you say that because my son loves WCW versus NWO Revenge on N64. We play it all the time. I have it. We play WrestleMania 2000 on the 64. We play
Yeah.
Subversary on the 64. He loves the old wrestling games. That's crazy. And I showed him. I still have a 64. I still got a lot of my old systems, and he likes them, man. And I explain to him because he likes to play, you know, WWE 2K. And I tell him, you know, these games, like the when THQ was making these old school games, they still use that format, that formula in the newer games. Like that's how good those games were back then. Like the engine is still the same. Like the way the moves are done and everything like that, and the way the game plays out. It's crazy that formula is still being used now.
Yeah, because like I like certain games like that, I won't front on that. I played some of those games, but like that's like the only wrestling I got into. But it's like it's good to see like when you're experiencing that with like your son too, and he likes that too. That feeling must be undeniable too, because like yo, I grew up playing this.
Yeah, it is, man. One of the best things about, you know, having a kid is when they actually like, when you show them, you know, you show them something old, and then you think they're gonna be like, oh, this is whack, you know, but they
Yeah.
like it, man. They like it because, you know, they like it because you like it, and that's awesome. That's one of the best things about having a kid.
With you too, having a father too. I mean, sorry, being a father too. Did you ever have to balance it out, like rapping and too? Like, did you ever have to like miss certain shows because you like the birthday comes first and you just like miss cancel the show?
I have not been in that situation, but I'm pretty fortunate, you know, because that's definitely a super tough choice to make, you know, especially now, you know, living off my music career. So it would be a very tough choice to make, you know, because it's you're kind of facing one situation where, you know, you don't want to miss a birthday, but on the other hand, you know, in order for you guys to have the life you have, I have to go do that. You know what I mean? So
Yeah, well, that's good
it
you
was
ain't been put in
nice,
that
but
situation.
I haven't met that situation yet, so I crossed that bridge when I come to it.
Would you prepare for a show? Would you say you have to watch certain anime or listen to a certain artist to get pumped up for the stage, or even meditate, let's say?
I actually am more of the, you know, into the meditation thing. I don't really. I just kind of, you know, I just like to lock in by myself for a minute, you know, meditate, get myself relaxed, you know, before the show, more so than like getting pumped up listening to music and stuff like that.
Okay. I understand that you had to steal the Slim Shady LP because the guy wouldn't let you buy it because of the Pat Taylor advisory sticker.
You did some good research, man. Yeah, that's Slim Shady LP is actually It Was Written was the first rap album I ever listened to front to back, but Slim Shady is the first rap album I ever, you know, went out and got from the store on my own. Now I meant to the story. I was young when that one came out, man. I think this was 2000. So I remember going to the store, Sam Goody, that was the name of the music store back then, and I wanted to get it, and the guy wouldn't let me buy it because it was parental advisory. So I went and I found, this was back when they had the edited version, they would just literally would have an orange sticker on it that said edited version. So I took an edited sticker off of another album, and I put it over the parental advisory sticker on that one. And then I took it up to the counter, and the guy, you know, he looked at it, and he pulled the sticker off, and then he put it back on the desk, and then I just took it and just ran out of the store.
He's like, I'm going to get this anyway.
That was the first time, and honestly, might even be the last time I ever stole something in my whole life. But, man, that album, I love that album, man. It's one of my favorite albums ever. Actually, since we're talking about the album, we were in France. I don't remember what city, but we had a show in France, and we were on a radio show, and this guy had a original vinyl pressing of Slim Shady LP, and I was like, dude, I'll buy that off you. No, I wanted to buy it from him. I told him I'll buy it off you right now, and he was like, he didn't want to sell it. He's like, you guys got any more of those Clear Soul Forces hoodies? And we had came out with some hoodies, and they sold out in like a couple of days, you know, and everybody wanted one. And he was like, oh, you guys got any more? And I was like, no, but I was actually wearing one. I was wearing mine. And I was like, no, but you can have this one. And then I ended up trading the guy my hoodie for that album. And I have the album right now.
Does it still trip you out? Because Royce is on that album too, and you were growing up listening to that album.
Yeah, it does, man. It was crazy. I always thought Royce's verses on Bad Meets Evil were bananas, you know. So it was crazy. That's kind of one of those like full circle happenings in the universe.
Yeah, I like how you said too. You traded the hoodie off your back for that vinyl too, because it's something like you both wanted too. It's like, well, I want to pay you, but I like that hoodie. I've been trying to get one. I was like, well, I've been looking for that vinyl.
Right. Yeah, man, it was dope. That was a good experience out there.
Are you big on vinyl, novelist?
I am. I love vinyl, man. I have a lot of my favorite albums on vinyl. When I was in Seattle on tour, a homie of mine, Wisdom, shout out to Wisdom, man, we were out in Seattle doing a show, and we were at his studio set up, and he had a copy of, he had Moon Food on vinyl, and I was just looking at it, and I took a picture with it, and then, dude, we had the show, and the next day, we kind of went over there, chilled a little bit, and then we were about to hit the road and head to the next city, and dude just gives it to me, you know, and I was like, wow. So I was babying it the whole time we were on tour, made sure I get it home safe.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Yeah, I love vinyl, man. I have a lot.
Okay, so this is a question that I'm starting to ask all my vinyl collectors out there, because I'm looking for this vinyl original pressing too, Pharaoh Monch's Eternal Affairs. Did you ever stumble across that?
Oh, man. That's a great album. I don't have it. I don't even know if I've ever seen it in person.
Oh, yeah. I seen it on YouTube. I know it exists.
Right.
Okay. Because that album is incredibly rare to find too, because it was a Rockets release too, and they stopped pressing it up because they didn't clear the Godzilla sample.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a terrible match, man.
Yeah, that man on the mic too. Oh my god, too. Like,
oh yeah.
I just want to see somebody go at him too, just so he can flex like how he did on Bad MF. With you having like a good background, and even it shows within your music, lyricalism too, And I'll keep it all the way, Buck. My favorite project from you is Dilla Instinct too, because like not only was Dilla made me fall in love with Detroit sound, it's that Killer Instinct game. It's like for the Super Nintendo. Oh, let's get it straight. I loved how you incorporated that too. Can you give me a little bit of background on that EP, sir? Because it's only 5 tracks from what I've heard on a streaming service. Right.
Man, I just, you know, I love, I've always wanted to, like I said before with the Nas thing, just always trying to find a way to show my appreciation for the artists and the people who have influenced me to do what I do and be who I am, you know, musically. So that's kind of how I came up. And then I just kind of thought of the Killer Instinct thing just basically off of it just kind of came to me, and I was like, you know, this is kind of a dope concept. And you know, my artist, the guy, I have the same guy that does all my covers, and I can just kind of vaguely express an idea to him, and he's just able to, you know, to create it, you know, the way he does. And then, you know, when I do my projects, I always knock the music out first, and then I go and I look for, you know, clips that I like, you know, to tie it all together and give it the vibe that actually fits the project name and the cover, you know. And now I was a big Killer Instinct fan growing up, man. I used to love that game, so.
Yeah. It's only right too that you incorporated too, because you loved it too. Did you ever have the Black Edition cartridge on that game?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's I think that's the original pressing when it came out of that too. I remember the first time seeing that, I was like, yo, why that Super Nintendo game
it
like
was
that?
It was always, man, so dope to see when certain games had different color cartridges, you know. That was really dope back then.
I'm curious too, because I seen you're big on Smash Bros too. Who you good with in Smash Bros? Because a lot of people be using sword characters. So let's say somebody who's not a sword character.
I hate that. I can't stand. I love Smash. When we were on tour, I actually played in a tournament in Atlanta, and I won. I play with Ness and Kirby and
oh really?
And Pikachu. Those are my three. Yeah, those are my three. Ness is by far my best player. Even when I was in college, I played in a tournament on GameCube on Melee, and I won with Ness. Ness is my best character. But it's playing that game online is like, it's so frustrating, man. And it's like, I try to teach my kids not to rage when they play the game, but then they watch me play that online. You know, and I'm just setting a terrible example because I'd rage when I play that. But it is, man. It's frustrating. Everybody plays the sword characters, man, so.
Yeah, because I noticed that, too. It's like, I was curious the very first time you got into Smash Bros. 2. Since the beginning or Melee?
Man, the first one, I started, I still remember the commercial for the first Smash on Nintendo 64.
All those puppets fighting each other, mascots.
They had the characters in the field, and they just started whooping on each other. It was, it's always been a favorite game of mine. Like, we used to, you know, back when I was a kid, we used to have the sleepovers, and we used to have the 4 controllers, and then into the 64, playing Smash all night, you know. And then GameCube 1 came out, which is still my favorite one. And same thing, man. It's just a super nostalgic game, but it just keeps getting better, you know. So I love that game.
Yeah, because not a lot of people, too, like, know the history of that Smash Bros. Games, too. It was originally, like, because I love that game. So, I believe that if you love something, you're going to go up and, like, look up the history of it, too. Did you know that that wasn't even supposed to be, like, a Nintendo, all the characters? Like, they just tried it out. It was supposed to be, like, a test, and then somebody came up to them, like, yo, you guys can make this into a game, and just sprawled out into this.
That's crazy. Crazy.
And,
man, I love that.
All right. Well, it's good to see that you don't use sword characters too, so that's very good to see.
I I mean, with the, I respect Link because Link was in the, you know, he was in the original, and so was Martin Roy. But then, no, actually, no, just Link was in the original. Martin Roy are in the GameCube one.
Yeah.
This is this all people, man. There's so many characters now. There's like 100 characters, and people just pick all these random characters that have swords and are super OP. And it's just, you know, it's you playing, you know, you play with a lower tier like Kirby, who I'm really good with, but it's hard to hit people because they have swords and they have reach and that's all they do. So it's super annoying, frustrating.
That's crazy how you said you use Kirby too. I would not have suspected that too. That's like the character we always bypass too, Kirby. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, I love Kirby, man. I love his games. I remember when I was younger, they had the little Kirby cartoon. I used to watch it all the time.
Oh, I love that Kirby just, right back at you.
yeah, that was a good show. And he's just, you know, Kirby's a dope character if you can play with him. Like he's like the perfect blend of like speed and power. Like he doesn't have reach, but he's still really, really, really powerful.
See, a lot of people be sleeping on them Kirby games. Remember Kirby Superstar? Oh, I forget that name. 70.
Yes.
Yeah, that was classic. And,
what was the one on 64 was really good too.
The Crystal Shards.
Crystal Shards, yeah, that game. The 64 Kirby game was really good.
I believe that N64 was like probably like the greatest Nintendo system ever. Because people still reference that.
Yeah. It is, man. My two favorite systems ever are Dreamcast and Nintendo 64. So.
Oh, I love how you said Dreamcast. You ever played Jet Set Radio?
Yes, I love that game. That's one of the best games ever. Dreamcast has, I think it's the best system ever for fighting games, for sure.
Power Stone,
I mean,
yes.
Third Strike, Mark of the Wolves, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, Soul Calibur, Capcom vs. SNK, King of Fighters, like, they were just Guilty Gear. There's so many good fighting games on Dreamcast.
Okay, well, I love how you said Dreamcast is one of your favorite systems, too. Some of your fighting games you listed off, too. What do you think's like, because, like, if you go back and still play your Dreamcast, too, like, those graphics still hold up, like, Soul Calibur, King of Fighters, like...
Yeah.
Did you ever discover music through video games? Because that's how I found Jurassic 5 through Jet Set Radio.
Yeah, definitely, man. There's Jet Set Radio had a crazy soundtrack. Even Street Fighter Third Strike, man. Third Strike, the theme song was one of the first times, you know, I had ever put a video game in and heard like actual hip hop music on it, you know.
Oh, okay. So that's what I love about that when people actually get the license in for certain hip hop things too. Like, do you ever play Def Jam Fight for New York?
Yes, great. Another great game. Yeah. Used to love the Def Jam Vendetta games.
Yeah.
I wish they would do more. Those were really, really creative, man.
I think that they kind of... Because, like, I don't know if you ever heard of when they did Icon, when they included, like, people like The Game, T.I. That one, like, went right under the radar because, like, there was basically no storyline for that.
I actually don't even know if I played that one.
Yeah, it came out on Xbox 360.
They had Def Jam Vendetta was the first one, right?
Yeah, and then
Def Jam Fight for New York was the second one.
Yeah, and then they made a third one.
So I don't even know if I played the other one.
I don't think it references, like, the old ones, too, because, like, I remember seeing it on Xbox 360, and it had, like, I seen, like, The Game fighting T.I. I was like, yo, what is this?
Yeah, right. So they just, I don't think I played
them. Well, because I'm very big on, like, labels, too, and the first thing I said, I was like, well, game's on Aftermath, so why is he on the Def Jam game? So with you two having... great career ahead of you too, because you're getting amazing feedback with that Still album too. What made you guys want to only make that 11 tracks?
Oh man, we just we had just kind of got back in the, you know, because everybody was kind of doing their solo stuff, and then once we locked back in, we were working on so much music. We were working on Still the same time I was working on Cerebral Apex, and you know, so we had so much mean, because we actually, you know, this is kind of a little Easter egg, you know, we have another album that's done already, you know, that's better than Steel, you know, and we wanted to cut Steel off and start working on the next thing, you know. That's just kind of how it got cut. It just got cut at 11 songs. And also, you know, it was our first album back, you know, as a group in a few years, so we just kind of wanted to give people something quick that they could digest, you know, in one sitting if possible, you know, and soak it all in and get to listen to every song and leave it at that.
Yeah,
you know, the attention span of the listener now is so short, man, with the streaming era and the way and the amount of music that comes out now. So you kind of gotta strike quick and then give people something dope and then just kind of go back to the drawing board, you know, and create something else dope.
Yeah, I like how you said that too. Like people's attention span are really short. And for, like, four people to come together, too, like, to make an album like that, too, like, that must have been, like, an accomplishment, like, because, like, you guys gotta remember, too, like, four people on a track, too, and the attention span of a listener, too, like, it may be hard to, like, hear some of the people out, because, like, some people, they just, like, listen to an album once, too, but if you really fuck with a group, you can tell certain artists out.
Oh, yeah. And you know that's another reason why, you know, our music is so it's really cohesive, man. We always try to that's why we do the, you know, kind of the back and forth thing, and we do the like verses where we're just like trading off with each other really fast. You know, really quick and concise to keep people invested.
When I hear tracks like Swordplay Nameless Remix too, because I'm a very visual person too, so when I'm listening to music too, I like to think of like what would the music video be like too. When I hear like that track, I can just picture like that video of you guys with microphones just sweating your hands in a circle, like going around in a circle with just saying the lyrics, because like, man, like, I forget, I think Vish said this before too, your lyrics are weapons too. Like, that shit can build you right up, and you can also, like, really destroy somebody just with that too. So it's like,
sure,
it's weapons too. That's what I love about lyricalism.
For sure, man.
I was curious too, the first time you ever met Big Vish too, because that's my guy right there. He was the first guest I ever had.
Oh, yeah, man. Vish, he was actually there the night we met Roy, so we've known Vish for a really long time too.
Okay.
And he's a good dude, man. He's just, you know, I see him around every now and then. Sometimes I go to you know, him and Royce's studio. They have a really, really crazy nice studio. And I go there, you know, sometimes, and Vish is there. You know, me and him have a really just big mutual respect for each other. He's a good dude.
What's the feeling like watching Royce, because you met him when he was doing a street hop, and that's when Royce had the drunken crazy bars. Oh my god, don't get me started on those drunken Royce bars too. Woo! He was fun. Right. Oh my god, but he got better within time too when he got sober. But that's the thing I wanted to ask you. You met him around street hop, and then you actually got to witness parts of Book of Ryan too. So I was curious, like, that motivation and what that gave you.
Definitely. Just seeing Royce be able to like transform himself, you know, not only as a person but also as an artist, and he's like kind of reached that level of like immortality in hip hop. You know, he's one of the best ever now, you know, just off of the things that he's done recently. Like, if you just go, you know, if you just look at Prime and from Prime up to now, you know, he's a legend, you know what I mean? And that's not even counting the dope things that he's done in the past. So
yeah,
just to him be able to reinvent himself, you know, and actually get better, It's pretty crazy. And then, you know, through all of that, and you know, the level that he's at to still, you know,
communicate with somebody like me, and he's actually one thing I love about Royce is he's very accessible. Like his like level that he's at, and you can still access him. Like you can still reach out to him, and he might answer you. You know what I'm saying? So you know, and I mean him text, you know, all the time. It's he's a good dude, man. You know, to allow himself to be available to the future like that.
I think it also it has to do with becoming sober too and realizing like people's music and career can affect somebody in the most positive way.
Yes, for sure, man.
And do you think like one day you ever make an album that personal like he did, or that's kind of like you're gonna step back from that too because like you don't think like you don't have enough story, like you have to live more life for you to make such a personal album like that?
Yeah, I mean, I've made some personal projects and some songs, but I think just for him to do, you know, Book of Ryan is like an autobiography, you know what I mean? So I definitely think I need some more years, you know, on this earth before I can do something of that magnitude.
The more headline shows overseas, like in France, Switzerland, and Japan.
Oh, yeah.
with that being said, too, Narvelous, this is a question that I ask all my guests, too. And the reason why I ask all my guests this is because no human being can ever answer this question the same, because everybody has their own way of dealing with this, too. And I believe, too, that if somebody really, really, really looks up to you, they can actually hear this and it can help them, too. Because I notice when people listen to interviews too, and artists may say something very inspirational too that may help somebody. So with that being said, do you have any words for somebody in a dark place trying to see the light?
Just no matter what, you know, you're going through, if you truly feel, you know, that you're at your absolute worst and at your absolute bottom, if you really feel like you've touched, like, the complete bottom, it can only go up. And there's always light at the end of the tunnel, you know, no matter what. And it could be, it might be, you know, a light that you don't necessarily want to see, but there's always, it's, every situation always has, you know, and into it, and there's always something at the end that'll get you out of, you know, whatever place you're in, you know. And also don't be afraid to reach out, you know, to other people to get help. I think especially men, I think that we are constantly feeling like we have to do things by ourselves. I go through that all the time. You know, and feeling like we can't ever get help from anybody, you know, or get help to do anything, and you don't have to feel like that, you know. It's perfectly okay to reach out to somebody, you know. So reach out. Don't go through it by yourself. And if you feel like you're going through something alone, hit me up. Write me a message. You know, I'll respond to you. And so it's like, yeah, you don't have to go through it alone.
And I like how you said, too, as men, too, like, that think that we always have to go through stuff alone. Like, it's okay to reach out and talk to somebody, too. Like, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and that's something that I struggle with all the time. That's a big problem of mine. So I know, you know, firsthand what it's like to feel like that.
Is that why you started doing meditator, too? Or is that something that you always done, sir?
You know, I'm really big into martial arts. I've been doing martial arts for a long time, so that's just kind of something that I do all the time, just calm myself down. Especially, you know, sometimes when I'm on the road, like, I cannot sleep that night. I can't sleep, so I kind of have to do that, you know, to get myself relaxed enough to, like, lay down and go to bed, sleep for a couple of hours.
Okay. See, that's good. That's good to see that you're such a humbled individual after everything you accomplished, and that everything that you're still going to accomplish within your career too. So, I called a lot of the greats. I called Kendrick before Dr. Dre signed him. I called Slaughterhouse before they signed Shady. Man, I've been on so much people early, so I know novelists are gonna definitely make an impact because look at Clear Soul Forces too. So I can only imagine what the future years hold for you, sir. So I'll definitely be paying attention.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man.
Anytime. All right, is there anything that you'd like to plug in before I let you go, novelist?
Yeah, man. Today is, the 13th? I don't know when this is going to come out, but I am on the May 21st. I'm putting out a new EP. It's called Metal Face Akage. It's produced entirely by a good friend of mine, Def D. He's a producer out of Seattle. So that comes out on the 21st, man. It's my new project. So make sure you guys check that out on the 21st. And tomorrow, actually, on the 14th of this month, LAZ, my Clear Soul Forces brother, he's putting out a solo project called People Under Detroit. I'm on it. There's some other really dope artists from Detroit that are on it. It's a really good project. Make sure you guys check that out too, man.
I was going to say, too, I definitely seen that on your Instagram, so I'll let the people know about that project, too.
Thank you.
With that being said, too, this is another class. I know I say classic a lot, from the Desk of Low featuring my guy, Novelist.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.